Growing up, there was nary a week that went without a glossy package showing up on my doorstep, addressed to my mom, full of samples of lipsticks, perfumes, or face masks. My mom, a freelance journalist, was the frequent target of these unwarranted envelopes in different brands' bids to have her write about them. She frequently wrote on various feminized topics, including, but by no means limited to, motherhood, beauty, and love. Nevertheless, she was quick to pass these products on to me, for my mom deemed many familiar feminine self-styling practices to be too girly. As a mother, intellect, comedian, and writer, she set herself pretty sharply against anything too ladylike. It is perhaps strange, then, that she should have raised a daughter who so readily and happily embraced the most feminine and feminized of such practices. Growing up, I loved nothing more than fairy tales, ballet, and Barbie. For a significant portion of my childhood, I insisted on dressing as a different Disney princess on a rotating basis, depending on the day of the week. My Halloween costumes were perhaps the most crystalline example of my obsession with feminine glamour. Halloween was, above all, for me, a chance to dress up as a femme style icon, real or fictional. One year, I dressed as Rita Skeeter from Harry Potter, a look in service of which I donned horn-rimmed glasses and a faux snakeskin purse, which would snap open to reveal a feather quill and prop copy of the Daily Prophet my friend had made for the express occasion. Another year, I piled my hair high, snapped a string of pearls around my neck, and went out as Audrey Hepburn a la Breakfast at Tiffany's, opera gloves, cigarette holder, and all. Holly Golightly, standing in the dawn outside Tiffany's, staring into her reflection in the robin's egg blue shop front, left a deep impression on my preteen soul. Upon its making, I began to dress almost exclusively towards her image, choosing black tights, cardigans, and turtlenecks above anything and everything. Carrie Bradshaw stood as another fictive ideal of femininity to me, in lifestyle and lifestyle, who I incorporated into my everyday via any piece that felt like a statement, leather boots, a faux fur jacket, and my own journalistic inclinations towards documenting my middle school goings-on. To me, as to many, these were women who had it all, lucrative careers, men who lusted after them, and bachelor apartments with walk-in closets. They were the ultimate cosmopolitan women, independent, spectacular, self-sufficient, sexy. Their place was the city, and their time was now. Like me, my mom grew up in Toronto. She was born into what was likely the first generation of women to expect to have it all, a home and a family, alongside financial independence via a career she loved. Being a freelancer, my mom has always been in an ideal position, in many ways, to balance these things, toting her four children to and from school between interviews, taking a break from writing an article to make us craft dinner. She hardly met the hyper-feminine mold of Holly Golightly or Carrie Bradshaw, but her Flintstone pants and silver rings were her own special touches on the iconic figure of the modern woman, after whom I sought so ardently to model myself. One day, one of the packages that showed up on our porch for my mom was an invitation to a brand campaign unveiling. It was explicitly addressed to my mom and her daughter. The both of us would be invited to participate in activities, and pizza would be served. My mom, no doubt sensing the advantage of a kid's dinner dealt with and a possible new lead on a story in one go, jumped at the chance, wrapping me up in a scarf and toting my then 9-year-old self down to the Four Seasons Center for the evening. Aside from the pizza, what followed was a rather bleak evening in which I was asked to write out some of my worst thoughts about myself and reveal them to the other preteen unfortunates in attendance. We then had to follow a series of self-esteem exercises with one another, which even then felt pretty bogus to me, especially considering I was being asked to flatter and in turn be flattered by an absolute stranger. It should come as no surprise that the campaign that was revealed to us by the end of the evening was the Dove Real Beauty campaign, now a linchpin in the company's overall branding. Dove was the first in a series of campaigns and rebrandings of this ilk, as multiple brands followed suit in the wake of its apparent success. The irony of a company looking to sell women anti-aging creams or slimming jeans while eulogizing so-called natural beauty was not entirely lost on me as I grew up, even if it was another decade or more before I learned the language to name it. Still, even with this intellectual understanding, it was difficult not to internalize this weird logic. That I was more real through not only what was in fact a very concerted effort at maintaining the appearance of beauty, thinness, and youth, but also through the necessity of erasing just what an effort this was and continues to be. Growing up in the advent of social media certainly expanded and expedited this bizarre logic. By now, the pressures and pains of passing off a highly tailored, beautified version of yourself as the real you, the most dazzling moments of your life as your reality in its entirety, are pretty familiar to most, not just women, though perhaps especially them. Though I feel pretty lucky to have divested myself pretty thoroughly of my investments in social media, well before the days of contour kits and Facetune, I have of course never managed to abstract myself fully from the chokehold on subjectivity, sociality, indeed reality itself, produced by the collusion of the modern woman, the so-called girl boss, and the wider neoliberal call to become an entrepreneur of oneself. Now a freelancer myself, so much of my life has become subsumed by this entrepreneurial logic. I, like my mother, am all too aware of the extreme vigilance and scrutiny required of me in managing my online self, and the menace to my professional, love, and social lives offline, my general absence from social media might pose. Like my mother, I am afforded a certain amount of freedom in this lifestyle, sliding dog walks liberally in between manuscript edits whenever I please. Like my mother, too, though, this increasingly means I am never quite off the clock. Feminized qualities like politeness and cooperativity increasingly bending back upon me to blur the boundaries of work and creativity, the pursuit of a livelihood versus that of a passion. Though I am told time and time again that I am as free as woman has ever been, I am not so sure. Because though it was certainly freedom I saw in the image of the modern woman, it was precarity, too. When Holly Golightly turns up to Tiffany's in the Manhattan Dawn, she is coming from a sleepless night of work as leisure, leisure as work. Upon closer inspection, she appears less and less a woman who has it all, and more one with nothing at all, no security, and no assurances. Just a croissant and a coffee from a paper bag, and her mirror image in the shopfront window, her face, no doubt bedraggled and exhausted, hidden behind the sheen of her sunglasses. There is a proliferation of reflections in this scene, the shine of her sunglasses bouncing off that of the window, the luster of her pearl necklace as she considers her reflection, the dim twinkle of the chandeliers inside framing her face. As she projects herself into this glittery image, encased in glass, I project myself onto hers, encased in silver, and we both graze the surface of something else and much more. It is a possibility in the process of being met, and its impossibility of full realization. A self in the process of its making, and also the very moment of its undoing. The glitter in my eyes as I reconsider this scene, and the same shine that touched them as a child when I first came upon it, contains nothing more or less than all the unnameable pleasures and perils of feminine identification, longing, romance, heartbreak. Downing the last sips of her coffee, Holly cocks her head to the side. Maybe desirous, skeptical, broken, or bemused, there is no way to decipher what this gesture means for certain behind the flash of her dark lenses. But as she saunters off in the emerging daylight, she embodies not quite a grace under pressure so much as she is a grace born of it. She is glamorous, yes, but not only in the sense of being chic, in the sense of its archaic and perhaps truer meaning, magical, elusive. The very world that spurns her was made in her image, and a wound is an opening too.